The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It is a busy Wednesday here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Sports360AZ.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Make sure to email us if you have any tips or any thoughts on our content that we produce. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. And it is the time of the year where everything is going on. It's one of those things where, you know, I think for a lot of the reporters here at Sports 360 AZ, I think Devin Henry on the other side of the glass would agree with this. We always say that football season is kind of our busy season. But spring always sneaks up on us because everything is going on. It's not just focused on one area. It's we have spring training going on. We have the Suns, the Coyotes trying to make playoff pushes. We have ASU and U of A basketball for both men's and women's getting going as they make their playoff pushes. College baseball as well. You have the Sun Devils who came in number three in the country. That didn't last long as they've dropped a couple of games. But U of A is no slouch as well. And GCU continuing to get wins against Power 5 programs like Oklahoma State and Oregon. So really busy time of year, really fun time of year, and a lot to get to. So let's waste no time with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. I think the rundown, the big story of the day was yesterday at Cactus League Media Day with Commissioner Manfred speaking to media on what happened with the Astros. Usually he always does like a state of baseball and it covers a wide array of topics. But there was one topic that was covered and it was the Astros and the fallout from that. And we got some answers. I was over there kind of taking it all in. We had some answers, but not, I mean, there's still plenty of questions as to what exactly was going on. Really, I think the biggest takeaway from that was, how come none of the players were, punished? It was because he had to give them immunity if they were going to give the information to have this investigation. That's a tough negotiation to have. From Manfred's point of view, he said we just wouldn't have had people really step up. It would have been Mike Fiers, who's no longer with the team, and that was about it. But now they were able to kind of have that investigation. I think more can come from this. Players can be punished. I think they should be punished. Because they were ultimately, like, yes, it was a systematic deal of cheating, but it was the players that had that. And when you, look, as a former baseball player, I'm not saying this is heightened even more. You know, I made it to varsity baseball. That was it. When I knew a fastball was coming in BP, I knew what to do with it. When I knew, in a scrimmage that they were strictly throwing off speed, I knew what to do with it. I don't have an iota the talent of Major League Baseball. And Giancarlo Stanton came out today and said, look, if I would have known what was coming in 2017, I would have hit 80 home runs. I don't think that's that far off. I mean, I know that's an exaggeration, but when you know what's coming, that simplifies a lot for you on the timing of hitting. And so the fact that they had buzzers, that they had trash cans, that greatly impacts the game. And I know that the Astros have tried to walk the fine line of being apologetic while also not admitting guilt, because then usually lawsuits follow, and lawsuits from players who got knocked out of the league because of bad outings against the Astros have already put in, certain lawsuits and things like that. But and it's just amazing how widespread this is and how when you start really thinking how much, like, yes, this obviously probably affected the postseason. This affected, certain players who, had bad outings were fringe guys, and that was kind of the last straw, and they got optioned down. Mike Bolsinger has a lawsuit against the Astros right now, and that was the scenario for him. But also, this is arbitration season. Archie Bradley was in his arbitration deal yesterday. And I think some of those numbers that of guys going into arbitration are probably pretty skewed because of them facing the Astros. And I'm sure there were times where maybe it wasn't utilized. There were times where they just had a bad day regardless. But that doubt, there's no way to know. There's not that alternate timeline we can go down where it's, okay, would this really, you know, would they have been as effective had that not been, you know, a factor? Or when did the Astros use it? What at-bats? Was it every single at-bat? That sort of thing. It creates a million, you know, rabbit holes that you can go down. And this is costing a lot of players money. And, you know, for some of you, it might be boo-hoo. The millionaires don't get as much of their $1 million. But look, as we've seen so many times, the shelf life of a pro athlete, whatever the sport, for the most part, is pretty darn short. So go make your money. Go do it. And if that affects it, yeah, there's a lot that is being affected by that. So Rob Manfred, apologetic. I know he went back on some of his statements saying, you know, the World Series is a piece of metal, you know, apologizing for that. Thing about Rob Manfred is, and we saw this a little bit with David Stern as well, he can get a little ticked off and it can affect him, you know, and he probably says some things that aren't too political, aren't too, you know, things that he certainly wants to run back, and he did that. A tough press conference to have, press conference, honestly, to kind of sit through. But this is where we're at right now. So the pieces need to be picked up. More needs to happen with the Astros. I know that immunity was granted to them, but I know more can be done as well. So a lot going on with that. On the Cardinals' end, it was official. We saw DJ Humphries, you know, reports earlier in the week that he signed an extension, a 3-year extension, about $15 million a year. I think that this was a good move for the Cardinals for continuity. Along that offensive line, he is, I think, the most talented offensive lineman. We haven't always seen that from him, whether it was health, you know, health-wise, he had trouble getting on the field the 2 years prior to this past one. We also heard about his nickname, Knee Deep, at the start of his career from Bruce Arians, that he was kind of a lazy player. We saw him fully healthy. We saw him as a veteran, and we saw what he can do. And he did pretty darn good this past year under that new system. Yes, he got called for penalties more than you probably wanted to see, but offensive tackles don't grow on trees. So I think that for $15 million, if they franchise tagged him, it would have been $16 million. And then you're right back to, all right, next year you have to figure out what you're going to do. Now, does this take offensive linemen out of the number 8 pick for the Cardinals? I don't think so. I think the Cardinals would be wise to consider, if the right offensive lineman is there, to go ahead and pull the trigger on the 8th pick. I have seen footage of CeeDee Lamb, of Jerry Jeudy Jr. Yes, like getting either one of those guys would be incredible. Yes, the defense needs so much help, but you need to invest in that quarterback. And whether that's getting weapons around him or protecting him, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. Use the Indianapolis Colts as a cautionary tale, because they had Andrew Luck, a very promising quarterback. And every year, despite everyone pulling their hair out and screaming from the rooftops, you need to protect him. You need to improve both lines, but especially the offensive line. They kept on going and getting Philip Dorsett and getting a bunch of wide receivers to put around him. But guess what? It's really hard to throw a football accurately and pick up a lot of yards when you're on your back. It's even harder when you're hurt. And I think that with Andrew Luck, the love of the game literally got knocked out of him. You don't want that to happen with Kyler Murray, who, while we've seen he's been very dedicated to the NFL, he also has a contract, you know, that could be sitting there in Major League Baseball. And that's guaranteed money, and that's a lot less wear and tear on the body. So that's another option. He hasn't necessarily hinted at that, but I'm sure that's in the back of his mind if things don't go correctly the next couple of years, that's always a nice little fallback option for him. So go protect your quarterback. go get an offensive lineman. Maybe not in the first round. Maybe the board doesn't fall that way. You know, I love mock drafts. I'll scour mock drafts. I saw that Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State, the top cornerback in the draft, fell to the Cardinals in one of those mock drafts. I don't remember who it was. That would be incredible. Yes, Patrick Peterson's here. One more year at least. Yes, they just drafted Byron Murphy. Yes, Robert Alford should be coming back. But go get the top corner in the game. That's exactly what they did with Patrick Peterson. They didn't necessarily need a cornerback. They really needed a quarterback the year they drafted him. But at five, he fell to him. He's been a Pro Bowl corner quite a bit for them. So if the board falls a certain way and the offensive tackle doesn't make sense, trading back doesn't make sense, that's okay. But I think if you don't address offensive line in the first two rounds, the Cardinals made a mistake. And yes, control what you can control if you're the Cardinals. Don't reach on a player. But just because you locked down a left tackle doesn't mean that the rest of that offensive line doesn't need help. They played better throughout the year, yes. But when you look at these playoff teams and how they've invested in their offensive lines, that's why they are where they are. The Chiefs have invested a lot into their offensive line. The Saints have invested a lot into their offensive line. Well, you have Kyler Murray on this rookie contract. You want him upright. You want him healthy. And I have a feeling that with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury's system, it's almost like playing with Steve Nash in basketball, like for the skill position guys. Like, your numbers are going to be slightly elevated. If you're a receiver, you're going to be in a position of success if you trust this system and you trust Kyler Murray. It's a lot harder to do that with the offensive line, and I think it affects Kyler Murray a lot more having a poor to average offensive line than having poor to average receivers. You invested a lot last year. I know some of those guys might not have panned out, but I think the greater impact, at least early on in the career, while he's on that rookie contract, could be with the offensive line. So that's why I think they should invest, if not the first round pick, the second round pick on the offensive line. They could go another route with free agency, but we've seen that song and dance quite a few times before with Jared Valdir, with Mike Iupati, with Justin Pugh. And most of those guys have had health issues in the past. And I think all of those guys were really good signings when healthy. Justin Pugh, he was pretty darn healthy this year. He was pretty darn good. But that's probably why they're available, is because of those health concerns. So if you can get a young, up-and-coming offensive lineman to come in and help take over and protect your greatest investment you have in the franchise right now, like, yes, you go ahead and go do it. All right, coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show, we are going to be talking some recruiting. Devin Henry also breaking down some racing. And Donnie Yannis, longtime Valley coach, coached with ASU. He is moving on to Colorado to coach at one of the top programs, not only in Colorado, but in the West Coast, the Western region. And he went in studio before he headed off to Colorado with Brad. So all that's coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. And we're going to talk some recruiting here now as we have kind of fully turned the page onto 2021. Yes, there are quite a few really good players still available in the 2020 class that are still trying to figure it out a little bit, specifically here in Arizona. But just wanted to kind of take a look at 2021 and kind of where they're sitting right now. Talent-wise, I think that it's a very talented group. 2020, in my mind, is the best we've ever seen come out of Arizona. There was a couple of top 50, top 75 guys in the class. When you look at Keely Ringo, who was a top 10 player in the country, Bijan Robinson, who was probably like top 25, and then you have Jacoby Covington and Lathan Ransom in that mix as well as Tosh Baker. All those guys, I think, kind of fell in the top 75 of the entire country. And then you go down, you know, to player number 35, player number 40, and they're getting Power 5 offers. Like, we've just never seen that before. I don't think that this 2021 group has quite as high of the ceiling, maybe not the top 25 type guys, at least as it stands right now. And I think right now, when you look at this group, I think there's probably 20 to 25 guys who would probably get Power 5 offers right now. So still a very good class, I think, by comparison to like the 2018 class, I believe, or 2017 class. It's already kind of better than that one in terms of just like ceiling and top flight type guys. And leading the way, three Saguaro guys, Quentin Somerville, Bram Walden, and Denzel Burke, all over at Saguaro. Somerville, edge rusher guy, defensive end, outside linebacker, depending on the scheme. Bram Walden, offensive tackle, one of the most technically sound offensive tackles that a lot of coaches have seen in recent memory here in Arizona, based on the people I talked to. And then Denzel Burke, we saw him a lot at wide receiver last year, and he was a big part, especially when Matt Polk went down, the Oklahoma State wide receiver now. When he went down to injury, Denzel stepped up big in the postseason. But based on what I've heard from Coach Mons, he thinks he'll end up being a defensive back, and he's this time last year, Before Burke had played a snap for Saguaro, he transferred in from Brophy. Mons said that he sees similarities of Byron Murphy in Denzel Burke. And Denzel's even a little further along in some of those areas. So when you look at the quarterbacks, it's, recruiting-wise at least, it's Ty Thompson, Kai Milner, Mikey Keene is another one that's starting to add a couple more offers. Will Haskell is a guy that I think is very intriguing over at Ironwood. We haven't talked Ironwood and recruiting in quite a while, but he has, four pretty impressive offers with Duke, Iowa State, NAU, and Akron. And what I said on the recruiting roundup was, when you look at his yardage, passing, it's not necessarily going to jump out necessarily, about 200 passing yards a game. But he threw 20 touchdowns. He only had 4 interceptions. The previous year, he had 4 interceptions with about half as many attempts. So he takes care of the football really well. And what he can do with his legs, he had, I believe, 14 more rushing touchdowns, about 900 yards rushing. I saw him play about mid-season last year, and it was what he could do when things broke down. He could, kind of maneuver his way around the pocket really well and either tuck and run or find an open receiver downfield. So he's a guy that I really want to see more of and is really an intriguing guy to me. I think they're pretty solid this year in offensive line. You look at Bram Walden, Jonah Miller, who's at South Point Catholic, has offers from the likes of his first offer was ASU. Texas is high on him. Washington, Oregon, those types of programs. And then you go down the list. Brock Dew is a guy that a little undersized, but very technically sound as well. And then Isaiah Glass over at Queen Creek. He's a guy that was a tight end as a freshman and a sophomore and kind of developed into that offensive tackle, grew a bunch. And he's under Travis Sherman's guidance, the former Queen Creek head coach, now offensive line coach over there. He wrestles, he does track, he plays basketball. We're starting to see more and more from him. Washington State offer, Oregon State, NAU, Iowa State, and now Arizona came in and offered him. So that's another guy that I think we'll really see step up. And then Caden Miles over at Centennial. They have a couple. Oscar Abundis is another guy. Just absolutely huge offensive lineman at Centennial. And we'll see kind of how they progress. We're going to have another year of showcases here in mid-May. And that's usually when things kind of blow up for a lot of guys. And either guys get their first Power Fives. Some guys just, use that momentum and carry it all of the way through the summer. And then there's guys like Cooper Darling and Ben Bray who get those Power 5 offers pretty quickly. Boom. They commit right away. Cooper Darling committed to Oregon State at that time. Ben Bray to ASU. So that was, I think, a trend we're seeing and a trend that's going to continue as well. So overall, I think this is a good class. The DBs, you have Stephen Ortiz Jr., Denzel Burke, again, if he chooses to kind of go that way. On the defensive side, Brandon Buckner is another guy that jumps out to me. Slightly undersized, but look, this guy came in, missed the first portion of the year with Chandler because of an injury to his ankle, and had 16 sacks in 8 games and a bunch of tackles for loss. Like, this guy is so quick. His dad is Brenston Buckner, who just returned to the Cardinals as a defensive line coach. Honestly, go back and watch the All or Nothing series of the Cardinals from a couple years ago. He was, like, it was Bruce Arians as the most interesting coach, and then him. And he had a lot of good stuff to say. He was also in the Hard Knocks with the Oakland Raiders, now Las Vegas Raiders, from, what was that? Was that last year? Gosh, like, time is flying by. But a very intriguing coach. Cool to see that, you know, he's back in the same city, because I know the family was living out here in Arizona while Brandon and you know, the other siblings were kind of getting through high school. But Brenston went up to the Bay Area to coach for Oakland. Now he's back with the Cardinals for a second stint, and I think that's pretty cool. Stevie Rocker and Jonah Miller are kind of the two guys leading the way in Tucson right now. Rocker, running back. He's just been hurt. You know, as a sophomore, he had 1,200 yards, and that was, he missed 2 games due to injury. This year, he started the year with an injury, never really quite got going, and had about 400 rushing yards, you know, about 200 receiving yards, if I remember correctly, and didn't quite get going. But I saw him at the All-American Combine, which is not the All-American game, but the combine, where a bunch of players from around the country come in, do a combine, go up against some national talent, and get evaluated by the likes of Brandon Huffman and Greg Biggins and, you know, those types of guys, the guys that are very, very good at their jobs. And Stevie was a guy that jumped out to me. Anthony Lucas is another guy, a name you should know for the 2022 class, the Chaparral defensive lineman. This guy already looks like he's like built like a 19-year-old. And last year he was playing as a sophomore. So he's very impressive. Just picked up a Michigan offer. Seeing some big programs come in for him. But it's pretty fun. Like, he plays with a fire, and he's a big dude and kind of can throw some people around. But off the field, it's like the gentle giant, just like a soft-spoken, really nice kid, and that sort of thing. So, and then, of course, you have the Queen Creek guys. This is the biggest recruiting class that they've had in probably ever recent memory. When you look at strictly the 2021s, you know, the Isaiah Glass, Hunter Borth, who is an athlete but will play most likely DB. His first offer was USC, and he's just kind of blown up since then. And then Crew Jackson as well, another guy that is pretty impressive. 6'5", defensive back, safety. Just like it's one of those, like, he runs 20 yards but takes like 3 steps to do it. Like, he covers a lot of ground quick. Both games that I was at, the first game – for Queen Creek, it was Queen Creek Boulder Creek in the postseason, and he, like, right before I got there, because I was going to multiple games that night, he, I think, had a hip injury or something and missed that game. And I, if I remember correctly, I think that next game he either was out or pretty limited as well. So I want to see him fully healthy. I want to see him go through this process. And you know, usually the jump from junior year to senior year, you see the guys really start to transform their bodies because they're, you know, either on the tail end of puberty or like just really hitting the weight room seriously. We've seen that a lot with a lot of Perry guys. It seems like they always have an offensive lineman or two or a tight end that just all of a sudden is like, oh yeah, I dropped 30 pounds of fat and gained 15 pounds of muscle, and now I'm much leaner and, you know, just kind of dominating guys. We've seen that a couple times. Kyle Patterson jumps to mind with that. But so just wanted to kind of do an overview. Anthony Franklin, a guy over at Pinnacle that has caught my eye as well. A couple of academies have offered him, Air Force and Army. Princeton, Yale, Harvard, Brown, and now Cornell. They came through yesterday, I believe, or 2 days ago, and offered him. He's a linebacker, defensive end. There have been a couple of Franklins over there at Pinnacle. So the Franklin brothers, and Anthony is certainly continuing that line. So pretty cool there. So coming up next, we are going to have Donnie Yannis and Brad Sesmat sitting down talking about Donnie's journey as a high school coach, a high school player, and then ACU's head coach, ASU assistant coach. Now he's heading off to Colorado. So just kind of one last check-in with him before he heads up and starts running Valor Christian. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
So now that National Letter of Intent Day is behind us, Super Bowl's behind us, we're in this period where you're saying, Brad, there's really not much going on, and I would vehemently disagree. Did you know that on Monday the 24th of this month, spring football starts at Arizona State? And many of you are saying, of course we know. We're big Sun Devil fans. Well, a lot of fans don't, and there's new faces. And one of those new faces that, from what I'm hearing, is going to make a tremendous impact is about to join us now via Skype, and that's the new offensive coordinator, Zach Hill. Four seasons at Boise State. He is now part of ASU. And I appreciate you coming on board. I'm just curious, did you have a huge garage sale to get rid of all the Boise State gear because it didn't match? It's been 2 months. How has this transition, seriously, how has this transition been for you, Zach?
It's been great. But yeah, I had to get rid of a lot of Boise State gear and handing up on all my ASU gear right now. So the transition's been, transitions are never easy, but into the house, my family's down here now and my two kids. And so it's going well, getting ready for spring ball.
How did this come to be? I guess I'm curious on the timeline of when did you get the call, you go back and forth. How'd this all come to be?
Well, we were in our championship week at Boise, so we're playing Hawaii in that championship game, and got a call from Coach Edwards, and it was just a quick conversation. He let me know that he was interested, and hopefully we could find a time to get down here and see things and be able to talk some football and just see kind of what happens with it. And he was great understanding what the week was for us at Boise State and the game planning and trying to finish our season off the right way with the championship. And and then got a chance the next week after we won the championship to get down here and interview and talk a little ball. And then it worked out from there.
Was it a no-brainer?
No-brainer for me. Yeah. This has always been – ASU's been a dream school for me to coach at. Loved the area. Loved the history, at Arizona State. And being in the Pac-12, but also just what offenses, can be here. And the appeal for quarterbacks, I think, is a high level for sure.
Zach Hill with us, new offensive coordinator at Arizona State. They open spring football here on the 24th. Offensively, if you were to paint a big picture for fans of what they're going to see out on the field, and we'll get specific about Jaden and players, but what are they going to see out on the field?
I think the biggest change, from a fan standpoint and what they're going to see in practice and then on the field, game day, is just, more shifts and motions, more personnels, some formations that may be different. And trying to just stress the defense in a lot of different ways, with some tempo things, with some cadence changes, with some, odd formations, and then the shift in motion piece being the major change.
You get to players 8 hours a week in the offseason, if I'm correct. Is that correct? It's 8 hours per week?
Yes.
Yeah, so in 8 hours a week, what can you change with Jaden Daniels one-on-one in this period of time? It's got to be on the field, but so far in interacting and wanting to see some things with Jaden Daniels, what can you say?
We still have that meeting time, so that's built into the schedule. So they're doing the conditioning and strength training stuff, and then we build some meeting times in as well. So obviously, a lot of that is just from a knowledge standpoint of understanding the new terminology, what we're going to do as an offense, watching cutups, getting ready for our installs and things like that. You can talk fundamentals. We'll get to some quarterback fundamental things, but we can't work with them on the field, at least with the ball. So there's things, we can do without a ball just to prep for the offensive structure and how things are going to get called in and things like that. But from a development standpoint, it's semi-limited.
This may be an obvious question, but you may have a different view than others. What do you like most about Jaden Daniels?
Well, he is very calm, cool, collected. Obviously, he's a great playmaker. Once he gets into that game mode, That's where he loves to be. So, and he's one of those guys that, you know, as an offensive coordinator, maybe we make the wrong call, but he can make that wrong call into the right situation.
Sure.
And you love those quarterbacks that can create and do their thing.
What about improvements out of Jaden Daniels? You look at him and say he could get better in this area.
Yeah, I mean, again, his is his first year of, you know, college football, and obviously had a great year. So there's a lot of things to improve on and develop, and I mean, he's going to develop all the way through. But, you know, initially just looking at, you know, tightening up his throwing motion a little bit with his mechanics and, you know, his run footwork, and just, you know, how we're teaching certain things offensively is just going to be cleaning some of that stuff up. But, you know, from a playmaker standpoint and what he can do on the field, I mean, he's going to be able to do a lot of, do a lot of those creative things that are oftentimes tough to coach. So it's really going to be honing in the skills and the fundamentals and technique within the offense, and then letting him go out there and be a playmaker.
Talk with Zach Hill, offensive coordinator at Arizona State. They open spring football later this month. In terms of other personnel that you are looking forward to working with, you may want to go by position. You may want to mention a player or two, not leave anybody out. But do you have some other names that you're excited to and seeing tape? Like, you know what, this could be interesting, Brad.
Well, I think Frank Darby, from a wide receiver position standpoint, having some big play ability, some deep threat ability, and he's got some experience. You know, and I know Jaden has that connection with him from a receiver standpoint. And then obviously we're adding a lot of pieces, you know, to this offense. So we're adding some grad transfers that are, you know, unproven for us, but have that, experience for other teams. So getting those guys in from an O-line standpoint is really big, just from a leadership. And then, you know, we've got a lot of younger guys in that O-line. So adding two seniors that have, you know, played at a high level, have experience, you know, into that mix, that's going to make that O-line so much better. And then adding some of those, you know, young guys, you know, we've got four wide receivers that are highly touted wide receivers that, you know, obviously got to learn it and develop.
Yep.
But you've got some playmakers there, and then two running backs who are on campus right now with Daniel Nagata and Diamante, and those guys are learning it right now, getting in the mix with the strength and conditioning program. They're going to be factors for us, and I know all of them are excited to get into spring ball here and show what they've got. So tight end wise, Nolan Matthews, you know, being a big body guy that can run and catch and be a deep threat, but also can, you know, be a factor for us in the run game at the tight end position. So those are a few of the guys that we're looking for that are going to be exciting to be able to work with.
Before I get you out of here, Zach, if you're talking about off the field and the recruiting aspect of it, because it all works together, obviously, in the college world, how do you see yourself in the home in terms of recruiting? Do you like that part of it? Do you like being with the coach? I know you could probably say it's all working together as one, but some coaches like the individual, some like the group setting. What do you think your strength is when it comes to recruiting?
I think it's a mixture. You know, I like recruiting and the fact that you're picking your guys and trying to get them to come and see the value of what you're doing there. You know, and there's a lot of different aspects of that, whether it's the program, whether it's the coaches, whether it's the type of offense, whether, you know, some of the history stuff and the development. I think we work from a staff standpoint and trying to hit guys that, you know, that we want here from a staff standpoint, but then it's also the individual connection. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, that position coach really connecting with those guys and understanding that they're going to be developed and, you know, because from a day-to-day standpoint, you're going to be with those coaches, you know, in the meeting rooms and on practice. And so the individual connections, I think, are really important.
Appreciate the time and the insight. We'll see you out there on the 24th as ASU practice gets started with spring ball. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Zach Hill with us, four seasons at Boise State, now at Arizona State, the new offensive coordinator for Herm Edwards. And again, practice gets started later this month. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.
What up, guys? Devin Henry here. And in the middle of the Brad Sussmat show, yes, we do need to talk some motorsports, what we got going on right now. Of course, championship weekend, the tickets just went on sale, and unfortunately, about all the camping is sold out in 2 days, about a week almost in total. Tickets have been on sale, and so I guess I'm not camping this championship weekend on November 8th, 9th, November 6th, 7th, and 8th, that is. So tickets are going fast. If you guys want a championship experience, I mean, that's kind of the place to go right now. Hopefully, we'll have that yearly, but we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, of course, the Daytona 500 on everyone's minds. Of course, we're still praying and thinking about Rocket Man Ryan Newman. Got that nickname many, many years ago for how many poles he would grab and grab and grab. And, of course, right now, the only news we have is that he's alert. He is talking to doctors. He's talking to family. That's about all the news that we have on Ryan Newman since his crash late Monday night. At the end of the Daytona 500, and I guess no news is good news, but still a lot of unknown so far on the condition and the updates on Ryan Newman. No updates on timetable for news. No updates on what the car is going to be driven by. There's a lot of things that are going to have to change if he can't get into a race car next week, which regardless of what his injuries are, he probably should not anyway. So just praying for Ryan, and a crash like that reminds everyone, especially after the clash 2 weeks ago where there was 7 pretty major wrecks, but you know, injuries don't really happen much anymore in racing because of how safe the cars have gotten, how safe NASCAR has made stuff like the Hans device, the helmet, the multi-point belt system, just the safety in the cars. And so this was really a shocker, I think, to a lot of the NASCAR world. Of course, many of the people who were involved in the incident, such as Ryan Blaney, who had the initial bump on Ryan Newman that sent him into the wall accidentally. He's been laying very low. He's had some friends go over and chat with him. He's not feeling very great right now. Of course, Corey LaJoie, who ended up being the car that hit him at about 200 miles an hour as he was airborne and flipping in the air and into the wall. He got at least the wind knocked out of him. He's still pretty beat up as well, both physically and mentally, from what happened on Monday night. Of course, we're all just thankful that he's still here with us. And my fondest memory of Ryan Newman is I get the opportunity to interact with a lot of these really fun NASCAR drivers. And Ryan Newman, one of those guys, a 42-year-old veteran to the sport who's been racing for many, many years in the NASCAR Cup Series, entered with Jimmy Johnson. And he's a really fun guy, but he does not take stupid questions very well from reporters. And so we were doing a media scrum. Eric Almirola was next to him. He is sponsored by Smithfield, and they had bacon on the car that week. And, of course, Ryan Newman, sponsored by Oscar Mayer, has pretty good bacon. And so they were chit-chatting about whose bacon was better. So naturally, I had to ask the question, what is better, turkey bacon or pork bacon? Now, I have an excuse. I have a reason why I would even fathom to ask that question. It doesn't really matter. I don't think anyone's going to care. But I ate turkey bacon the majority of my life. My dad can't eat pork, and so I ate turkey bacon up until probably about a couple of years ago, and it's not bad, but it's not pork bacon. But of course, I threw that question to Ryan Newman. Some of these guys are health guys and don't eat pork or whatever, or on a diet and whatever, and he just gave me a look like, you are a freaking idiot. Why would you even ask that question? What answer could you possibly imagine you would get from me about turkey and pork bacon? I can't exactly remember his response. I have it recorded, actually, I think, in my phone. I need to write it down sometime. But he essentially basically said that was a terrible question. Like, what is turkey bacon? Why would he even ask that? So, not a fond memory. So, I'm just thankful that one day I can hopefully get a much better memory of interacting with the Cup Series veteran Ryan Newman. But of course, he stays in our thoughts. And now we do need to move on, because Vegas is coming up on Sunday, going through the West Coast swing. Vegas, Fontana, which is Auto Club Speedway, and then out here to Phoenix Raceway to close out the West Coast swing on March 6th, 7th, and 8th. So off to Vegas, mile and a half, off to California, even larger than that. Then they come to Phoenix Raceway, the 1 mile dog-legged oval. And this is a very important race. We've already mentioned previously that this is a championship preview. For the first time since 2002, 2001, the race that the championship is held at is on the schedule earlier in the year. So these crew chiefs, these drivers, get an opportunity to see what this brand new rules package coming to the short tracks is going to look like. So if they're in the championship four in November, they can actually see what their car is going to do. They can take some notes of track conditions, rubber conditions with the tire, rubber conditions on the track. If NASCAR is going to put down another tire compound, they can all write all those down, see what's going to happen. But what's most important about this weekend, or the FanShield 500 weekend, I should say, I'm getting ahead of myself, is seeing what those drivers do. Is there going to be strategy played where they're more focused on writing down notes and getting things right, or are they just going to go all out for the win, and what works and what doesn't work, oh, I don't know, we'll figure out the rest when we get here in November. I think that they're probably going to focus on that more on practice time and then race during the race. But these are completely different vehicles than what they brought last year, with a much smaller spoiler, including many other changes to the vehicle. When it comes to what they're racing, it's not just about the driver, it's about adaptability into what these cars are going to be doing on the racetrack. And so that's going to be very intriguing. We're going to have some phenomenal guests here over the next few weeks, hoping to have some rising all-stars, some spunky veterans. So be sure to keep it to Sports360AZ.com the next 3 weeks. We're going to have some phenomenal content coming up on racing with some phenomenal drivers. And, of course, once we get to the FanShield 500 Speedfest weekend as well, with the ARCA Menards Series, the Xfinity Series, and the NASCAR Cup Series.